A truck was moving across town in a very strange
way. A Jewish psychiatrist named Theodore Isaac Rubin.
The driver of the truck jumped out and he had a huge dynamite, which could be
one of the most important I'm sharing
with
you today.
And he began to beat the side of the truck, and he ran around to the back more than any other.
Beating the back of the truck,
and then to the other side,
all
was
watching the light, and as soon as the light turned green,
part of what
he destroyed
our
back into the
appreciation of
happiness itself.
When he came to the next red light,
he
stopped again, quickly jumped out of his truck, took the 2x4,
if you're doing something that you enjoy,
the truck
gives you
in the back and the other side, and when it turned green again, he threw it back in and drove off.
It's happened every time he came,
not only to
a
light,
but also
to his stop
sign.
When there was a man following him that watched this happening and decided that since this wasn't an everyday occurrence,
if
the
end result
this individual
is my only satisfaction,
what would
and the process is looked upon with disdain
as
and followed
him, the truck driver
and
arduous, into a restaurant
then
parking
I'm missing
lot,
all
and
the
now
time
he had the
and energy
to
I
ask
put
him
into writing
why
that
was,
book, he was doing this.
Waiting for the
he
product.
Said,
you follow
me? I've just got to know, my friend.
The result of the product is infinitesimal.
Jump out of your truck.
The joy and the happiness
to a
from the process
lasts much
longer
and you begin
and
to more
enjoying
like and more
this.
Satisfying over
and
an extended period
like
of
this.
Time in your life.
He said, I've got a
2-ton truck.
And I'm
if you are totally goal-oriented
in a
success-oriented culture,
and I've got to keep
and
two
if the
tons
in the
air the
goal,
all the time,
you have destroyed much of the possibility for happiness in your life. Since almost all of your life, hear this, almost all of your life has
you
to
ever
be the
felt
process
like that?
And not the product.
I tell you,
if
I
you
feel like
live
that.
In peace with the process
the
of living itself.
And I'm afraid that most church planters
happiness.
Feel like that man
if
trying to transport
nothing out of the doing because you are looking for the high that will come at the end, you are in serious
and
trouble.
And what I would like to do in the brief
but
time
if you
that
have
we
indeed
have
been
today,
nourished by the whole process,
highlight
and it's given you great
you,
happiness,
the
that result at the end
being
of the road,
careful,
positive or negative,
being very careful
terribly
of the demands of the ministry.
You just
and
go
all those
the next
demands
process.
Can wind up costing you.
I try to get my patients to
that
appreciate
kind of a,
what
of
I call
a lifestyle
process
being
living.
A 2-ton truck
because
driver
the process
with 4 tons
is what life is all about. I'd say
it
really
costs you.
I'd say
it can
we're
cost
in the
you
process.
98% it can cost you your family
of the time.
It can cost you your personal
if you're
walk
living
with God,
just for that final 2%, my friend, you
it can even
are
cost
in
you
trouble.
Your ministry itself.
The truth is,
this week you're going to learn a lot about how to develop and establish public ministry
is in trouble.
And it may very well be all futile if your private
process
world is not
living.
In order. Men and women, we are seeing
product
too
living
many
will rob
people
you of
fall.
Joy
in the ministry.
Private worlds are not
if
in
you
order.
Always are living for some
and
future product, whether it be
fall,
an attendance goal,
opportunity of
or to have that
son,
building, or to have
they
that extra staff
said
it'll always be there.
There's
some product
the fall,
in front of you. I've got them in front of me all the time.
If
you're living
if any
for
man
that,
thinks he stands,
you will miss
he,
out on life.
Fall. It can happen to you.
If you're
you
sitting
miss
here
out on the
whole
process of life.
And
you are
me,
apt to live your whole life for something that
then
is not
your
affair,
danger.
Just for those brief hours you get, and then you're back in the process,
about the
and basically you're a miserable
your private world.
Person.
A vital,
God-honoring,
miserable
public
ministry begins with a vital,
because you haven't learned the difference between
ordered,
process
private world.
And product.
The
don't live for the 2%.
Before we begin, I'd like to enjoy a few preliminary items.
First of
revolutionary.
All,
just because I am giving
I am
this
a driven man by nature,
does not mean
to go
that my
McDonald's
private
standards.
World
I
live perfectly in
for
order.
Achieving
now,
goals.
A great surprise
and I have
you,
just
those of you
started
me.
To taste the
my
joy
private world
of
is not
perfectly
living.
In
order.
I am not
I'm
struggling in
areas
heart.
As I know you are.
But
I do
Becky
not
and
come
I,
my wife
and I have a slogan for this year,
world,
and that
I
is,
come
we want to live life.
I come
we're
as,
not backing off,
as,
but we want to
as
live
someone
life.
Who wrestles with these same issues to seek to encourage you and to encourage myself.
Not
until
I get organized, I won't be here. Not until I'm off support where I need help. Not until I reach this
covering in the notes that you have before you are not the only areas.
Because when you get there, there's another one.
There's several very important areas that I will not even be able to touch on.
Thinking through the importance of this.
I'm just hoping that these will be enough to get you to begin creatively thinking about these and several other ways that you can order your own personal world.
I call them newfound freedom.
If I do nothing
more
than stimulate your own creative thinking,
that's all I would have the time to write. There are several more, but those are the ones I want to highlight. What are the freedoms
of an ordered private
third
world?
Let's quickly
challenge
you to move beyond what I call mere keeping.
If you order your private world according to the dynamics that I have
you
just outlined for you,
you are smart enough to know the gist of
these
what I am supposed to say to you in this hour.
You will experience
most of you, I think, come here pre-programmed.
You will experience
what you think I'm going
kidding.
To say, and that is,
but I'm really not.
I'm supposed to say,
see, the
what?
Work is integrating these dynamics into your life. If you do that,
you need to be having quiet
the results.
I experience
shame on you.
To the degree that I apply the dynamics
time.
Is the degree that
you
I
need to go back and have
freedom.
Quiet time.
See, the same
now
for
I'm
you.
Supposed to get
first
you pumped
all,
up so you can go back
you'll experience
and start
a freedom from anxiety
what else
about
do you need
church
to be doing?
Growth.
You need to be
to an enjoyment of your
think
work and leisure.
Spending time
a man with
family.
An ordered private world works hard and he plays
you
hard.
Don't realize the
and
bad,
he
you don't realize
both.
How bad your priorities
if you don't enjoy your
work
to induce
that ought to be assigned to you that you're violating
so that
some
you, with all
of
your
these dynamics
leave
that I
this
just
place
outlined.
Feeling how
the church planting
you really
process
because you're
can
such
be
a
very
bad
fulfilling.
Family man.
If your private
and
world
you need to be
is
memorizing
order.
Scripture.
I just hate I
and you need
I
to
know
be
what it's
you
like
can
just
to be a
fill
church
in the
planter
blank.
On the field.
That's what
and
I'm supposed to
an
do.
An arduous
but I'm not going to do that.
Wars me. I'm a stinker.
What I want to do
right
is not
me.
Fall into the trap
and
of
just
laying
no,
some guilt trips
no
on you and sending you out so that you might be a better
there's
world
no experience
world
of joy
I want
in
to
the process of being
I
a church planter. You can. You can experience that freedom. You'll integrate these
dynamics
into
your
life.
I want
to
touch on some of the reasons
here.
Why we
a vital
don't
part
do
about
things.
Staying fresh
I
in
want
your ministry
to
is taking time for
some
leisure.
Wrong
don't
thinking.
Violate the fourth commandment.
And I want to challenge you to
I
think
care
through
a hardcore
some of your fundamental
presupposition
or a soft core
some of your fundamental premises.
Don't violate the principle.
And some of your fundamental
God has given the
life
for you.
Values.
The Sabbath has been given
I believe
for
that
man.
If we begin to think through
this means
our values.
I heard this
once begin
from
to think
Warren,
through
a man out of Southern California.
He said, this is what you need to do.
We all have rule in your mind.
The question
divert
is, are they biblical
daily.
Or are they not?
It's the first thing.
And I believe that the foundation
to take little vacations in the midst of your day
life
and
world
like
view.
Too.
Out of that, the applications
daily.
Will come.
You are
second,
smart
learn to
withdraw
weekly.
What you would like to do is challenge
the premises
something with A or yearly.
I'll just say get away
in your particular world and life view.
Wing that
but because
way.
Of get away
the amount of material I want to cover.
People, you must
take
a day
8 to 10 hours.
I am
there's an
grieved
hour
when I
hear
for 1 hour church planters who do
and
not
I just
take
led to
a 24-hour period off every 7 days.
And
if you're here, I hope you come and
but rather than that, I am going to
it's
just touch.
I'm just
going
to touch on
the key dynamic
out of seven.
And
I believe
you
are violating
again
the fourth
my
commandment.
Being to stimulate your
sin.
Thinking. That you might move ahead in the realm of ordering your private world.
And to rest.
And because
and
of that, I'm going to ask you to not ask questions
until the end.
To be if you have a question, jot it down. I'm going to try to cover
that
all
means
of
that you need to buy an answering machine.
Do interrupt
if you don't
me
have one.
If I begin to babble
ask him
or not make sense,
I'm sure Paul
or be incoherent, I'm going to have 3 hours of sleep right now. So I could
okay, and the idea here
so
is turn on that answering machine so you can get any emergency.
But
you are
okay,
in
so
why
what it wants to do is begin looking at the
you
dynamics behind
touch.
Ordering your
I tell you,
world.
I go that
24,
my Tuesday is sacred.
You
I will
your spare
fight
time.
You for that
there's
Tuesday.
A man trying to order.
And if I'm not doing a funeral, I am gone. And I creatively am gone.
Let's begin by
understanding
that a man who has his private world in order
is the idea
man who has developed a biblical view.
And
men,
you are responsible before God
that's your first
the priority
of biblical view
of integrating
of
that
success.
Into your life
for your relationship with your wife
your
and
definition
family.
Of
another
success.
One is take your
and
vacation
by the way, you have
I,
one.
I was sickened
greatly affects
your life
as I have heard people
your
say
your definition
of
like
church planters
of
first 2 years
how much you worry
set your vacations aside.
It affects the amount of stress
I tell
that
you what,
experience,
I believe it right out of
it affects
of
your
hell.
Sense of personal fulfillment in the ministry
you.
And on. And
you,
you
have
an a definition
you
of
4 weeks of vacation.
But what I have
take
found
it.
With myself
take
and with others
four.
Is that often we
push
haven't
it.
thought through that definition. But we're living in light of it.
So most businessmen I know don't get 4 weeks right off the bat.
It's the highest priority. There's a reason that it's there.
Your definition of success is freedom from frantic busyness and overwork to a balanced lifestyle.
It's the controlling center of your life.
Freedom from frantic busyness and overwork to a balanced lifestyle.
The problem is another result of
we've all been naturally programmed with
a man with an ordered private world works hard, but he doesn't
overwork. Most of the criteria
he knows
of
that
the
God
views
causes
are what I call quantitative. He will not sacrifice his health, his family, his personal walk with God for the ministry. Instead, he knows how to walk away from his
perspective
in order to make a biblical priority.
Our church
he
is in
limited goals,
an affluent
knows how to do
suburb
it with all the time
of Dallas, Texas.
In his life. One of the
and
hardest things for me personally
has a is to walk away from my desk at my
success
office.
Is defined
I tell
in Plano, Texas.
When I'm facing deadlines,
and the secretary has
the
commonly
whole
called
stack
of messages on my desk
the
that have to be returned, and I see
closet
that the preaching schedule
is
such
house,
I had a funeral
is,
this week, and
like.
I'm calling off, and, I,
nice
and I've
is,
got to make this preaching deadline, and I look up,
what
country 5:30, and I've made a commitment.
And your
my
clothes
kids to be with
how
them before they're down at 8 o'clock.
That's, those are the four
C's what I used to do? I used to call
in my ministry area by which
you
a man defines or a woman defines
and, you know, it's just
success.
Rough. The ministry's tough.
The thing that's interesting
you
is
know,
that
pray
we
for me
in
and,
the Church of
you know,
Jesus
I'll
Christ
be home late tonight.
I might
have
our own definition.
Dinner, honey. But for the cause of Christ, I'll move on tonight. Pray for me. And then hang up.
See, in a sense,
hang up the phone too.
Think
you just
what is
awful to
make success. In life of the church or
he's
the church
killing
planter.
Himself. He's getting sick
you are
for the
success.
Kingdom. No, he's doing that.
What?
And I tell you what, that is not a man of God. That is not
a
man of faith. You don't see what a man of faith
worship.
Is. A man of faith is
you
looking right at the face
yes.
of those six
what?
People. They're going to be real upset with me because I don't call
but
them.
They come back the next week.
A man of faith is saying,
very
you know
good.
What, I don't care so much about
you
the quality of my
yes.
message this
any
week. I care about my kids more than the quality of my message.
If you, if
I'll
you,
trust
if you
God
quickly
with that
off
message.
Financial
I've been
support.
Responsible. I haven't been
and
slack.
I want you to think about this
and I'm going home. And I'm walking away from my messages. And I'm walking away from all my responsibilities. And I'm going home. And when I go home, I'm going home with the mindset
okay.
of servanthood to lovingly move into their lives and care
your
them.
Relationship
I'm going
with
home
your
with
wife
here to
is
serve
completely
them,
down the
not
tube.
The king of home serve me.
It doesn't
a whole
matter
perspective.
If your children are on
drugs. Next, freedom from comparing yourself to others
if you're
not
a
man of
integrity
for their welfare. Freedom from comparing yourself to others to a sincere concern for their welfare.
In many
a man with
minds,
an ordered private world knows true
success
in life is not measured by nickels
know,
and noses.
He's very
it is
successful.
Not measured by attendance and finance
really?
Charts.
Is
such a man
successful?
Is able to rejoice in the
what's
growth of someone else's
of
church.
Is it merely quantitative?
I want you to be honest
or
with yourself. You don't have to be honest with me right now.
False views
but
are usually built
test,
around career achievement and professional recognition. How well
and I
your
think we need
private
a hard
world
is
ordered
our views
is
success.
How you respond to Mr.
A biblical view of success
reporter.
Is found in Matthew 25. I wish we had time to look at the charts and go through it, but we don't.
Here
I would just refer
Pharaoh.
You to that. Matthew 25, 14 through 30, we find the parable of the talents.
He's here.
Here we find
you've already
the success for God is measured in
he's
terms
proud
about what the old
charts
to
him
and over the last year.
Tell
you
kind of,
this
you know,
you're
liberating.
Talking about fishing and frogs and you work right on
this
attendance report.
Yes.
No, he can take anything you talk about. Watch him. Watch
career
the mature attendance. He'll take all those things. I'll work it around too.
Yeah, we're doing pretty
success
good.
Before God is measured in terms
right
of faithfulness.
How are you doing?
Faithfulness to him.
You see?
I tell you what, you want
another
good
definition
test
of
another good test
that
is
I have found
what happens when they're doing poorly.
Faithfully pleasing God.
What happens when you hear
with the resources
that they're not out of that plateau
and responsibilities
what happens when you hear
that
they're declining?
Has given you.
Does your heart kind of
faithfully pleasing God with the resources and responsibilities.
I don't like that
word
competition.
Has given
I don't like it
you.
At all. Your competition is.
I believe that's a primary
church,
application
that
we can draw
like
from Matthew 25.
You see, Jesus rewarded each man
how you
in that
feel
parable,
at those times.
Even though some actually produced
ought to be a
more,
good indicator, ought to be a light go
each
off.
Each man was rewarded.
To talk to you about your private world,
in a fashion,
your values, your view
that was
of
in success,
deep,
next
faithfulness.
Page. Other freedom you'll experience. As you integrate these
see,
dynamics
issue
in your life,
is not freedom
the
size from anxiety
about being perfect.
It is not the
conducting yourself the way you
that's
are.
That's God's business.
an hour or two can go into this list.
How faithful are you?
Summarize it by saying,
carrying out your responsibility.
Such a person's worth is not tied
not only
to what he does,
your church,
or what he produces,
but in a more holistic fashion towards your church, towards your family, towards your meaning your wife, your children, your personal life,
for myself and for others.
Your prayer life.
To come to grips
are you loving
with
those
the revolutionary
around you?
Freedom
are you
that is
actively
available
moving in
to
love
alcoholic church
toward those in your
type,
circle of relationships
whose identities are tied
men and women,
to the product,
a biblical view of
to
success
be set
is
free,
radically
to serve just as fervently
from the world's view
but their
of
identity is not linked
it
to
is
their
qualitative
ministry.
Not
their
quantitative.
Identity is linked
it has
to
a
their
high
position
emphasis
in Jesus Christ
on relationships.
Finally,
we need to
freedom
think
from
through.
Seeing the ministry
okay?
as merely working
with
at programs.
I don't want to be misunderstood.
Seeing it as loving people.
It is very easy to hear what
seeing
I just
it as
said.
Loving people. So
and
many
think,
times, church planters say, and I am
sure
guilty
good to
of
know
this
that.
By my very nature
now
and
I don't
temperament.
Have to set goals,
you know,
work
I
hard,
love the ministry,
put in hours, and assume responsibility
I just
anymore.
I hate people.
Now I can just kind of sit back and say,
you know,
well,
I got my goal,
I
defined
success
my objective, I got my plan, I got my vision, and
those
emanating
reports
all
anymore.
All
I don't have to worry
just
about
in the
right figures anymore. I
of
don't
what
have
I'm
to work hard
to do for God and for His kingdom.
How convenient.
Some
I
of
hope you
here
hear
today
me that.
Knew Mark Pitt.
Because a
did
man or a woman
no
with
Mark.
A biblical view of success,
dynamic
I believe, not only works equally,
a man that I had deep
harder.
Respect for.
But he worked.
The old
Delmarva
Presbytery started
premise.
Several churches. He got cancer several years ago.
Life
he died.
It'll keep you from
not
falling
too long
apart.
Ago.
Which I hope to show
before
you.
Before his death, he told a group of people.
I don't want you to misunderstand.
What he'd do.
Okay?
If he had
secondly,
to do
a second dynamic.
It was a man to me.
A second dynamic of a man
to follow.
Who has his
he was a
private world in order. Is a man who knows what it means to
and he began
balance
to
time demands
what do you
by biblical priorities.
Now that he was approaching death.
Balance time demands by biblical priorities.
He said he worked just as hard.
Every
planting.
One of us has been given by God the exact same
to the things
amount
he was committed
of time
to, but the one
every
thing
day.
That he would
I've
do
always been intrigued by that.
Is
every
that
one of us is given 24 hours. We just think that
process.
God gives some people more time.
That he would
doesn't.
Resist the temptation
you always heard
of
the
just
complaint,
seeing
I just wish I had more
as
time.
A means to the
God
end
gives everyone the exact same amount of
and
time
and that he would
every day.
Actively give himself
and we all face many different demands on that time.
To all of
the
those
church
people,
has certain demands on your time.
Around him.
Your spouse has certain demands.
Impact
your children
life
have certain demands on your
Christ.
Time. There are multiple forces that are seeking
a man with
to draw on you.
World.
There are multiple demands upon
God.
Your time and your gifts and your abilities.
And
the issue is, how do we determine
other
which areas get our time?
That's the greatest commandment.
And then once we have determined that,
the
how do we determine
is
how much of our time
of
to give to each of the
private
areas?
Life
that
is
the $64,000
let me give you a couple books.
That is the issue
here.
That
I think you ought to read in light of some of this. You probably got mail liberating ministry from success
properly.
Syndrome by Kent.
The danger is allowing the time demands
not,
in
that.
One particular
liberating
subcategory
from
of your life to dominate
your private world
wrongly
by Gordon MacDonald
to the detriment of the other
falls,
legitimate calls upon your time and demands placed upon you.
Another book you
a man
with
an ordered private world is one
pastor
who balances his time demands with biblical priorities. This means that we need a thought
rhythms
group
of
priority
life.
Grid.
I don't know his name. Write it down.
If you really
need
to have
it,
you can find it. Prioritizing
life,
just certain areas over others wrongly. We need a thought through priority grid by which
Father,
we make
thank
decisions.
Thank you for the time,
day
the
in
words
and day
that were
out.
Said, the concepts
I'd
that
like
were
to
shared to cause us
what is
to be men
probably
and women
held
of
by
God
almost 90%
of
evangelicals here.
But we ask this in the name of Christ,
I like
so
to do that
His
kind of
kingdom
stuff.
Might be advanced.
So
the
traditional model
of
priorities, I believe, is wrong. And I would like to just touch
questions?
On this. Again, we could spend an hour on it, but
there are some.
So the traditional model that most of us have been exposed
yes.
to over the years goes something like this. What's the first thing on your priority
you know,
grid?
I,
to get
I,
your first
I don't
attention.
Know the name of
God.
The book.
And then what
this
you have
was given to
me by
commitment
David
to God, and
he
has satisfied
so
that
you know David
time demand.
In
Boca Raton.
What's the next thing?
Any other?
Family.
See, this is about stuff I was supposed to teach you.
Why don't you talk
no,
to me afterwards? It's the same address as
okay, and then
daytime
family is next. And
then
the family. Who's
they
first in the family?
Publish Hobbs materials.
You're right.
Or your
specifically
husband.
To train you in how to use
and
the
and then who's next?
Integrating
children.
Your time
and then you have disagreements.
Anything
church
else?
Is next. Business next. Whatever it would be on down the line.
Yes. And the problem I have with that is I believe that priority grid is unbiblical. In fact, I believe that God shouldn't be in that priority grid at all.
Would I preach differently?
Now notice, Paul Taylor's planning right now.
I would surely not change the dynamics, but my emphases and my applications would be different.
In other words, what I'm saying is that Jesus Christ should not be the first of several priorities in your life. And this is not theological nitpicking. I hope to show you this. He should be first in every area of life. I believe that priority grid quite easily breeds this dichotomy between the secular and the sacred that is the downfall of so many people that don't have a Christian world in life view or a Reformed world in life view today. I believe it can breed it. It's unbiblical, I believe, because Jesus Christ is not just to be the first of several priorities. He's to be first in every area. He's to be first in your relationship with your wife, and on and on and on. Second problem I have with this priority grid is that I believe it's very unrealistic. I tested it. It doesn't work, and it's proven faulty. And so I stand here to declare that it's wrong. Let me give you a for instance. Sometimes it is right before God to put your wife before your quiet time. Sometimes it is right before God to put your church before your family. Sometimes it's right to put your children ahead of your wife. It's all according to the context. It's all according to the particular need. Sometimes it's not. What I am afraid of are simplistic solutions by which we try to have and rule our lives. You see, when I challenge men to make a year commitment with me to officer training, that means that for a period of time, those men are apt to spend less time with their wife and with their families, and that's not always wrong. Now, I believe there is a line that you can cross where it is wrong, but it's not always wrong. It's not that simple. The old priority grid, I believe, is unbiblical. I believe it's not practical. Let me give you a suggested alternative, what I call concomitant priorities. Concomitant priorities. This means simply that you learn to live with the tension of keeping in balance the many time demands that you have on your life. You know, we don't like to live in tension. I like for things to be simple. I like for things to be outlined. I don't like to have ongoing tension. But you know, more and more I find that reality is often living with tension, theologically and practically. Living with a tension. I'll never forget a time I had with a man named Gene Ward. Some of you know who Gene Ward is. He's written several books on discipleship. The president of the Navigators organization called him probably the best lay disciple maker in the country today. Gene is a good friend of mine and has been for years. He used to preach for me when I would go out of town on vacations at our first church. And I remember meeting with him once, seeking to work through the issue of priorities. And he's a godly man. He's actually written a book called The Godly Man. So of course he's a godly man. And so I met with him and began to talk through with him, how in the world do you order your priorities? I was a new pastor. I'd just been as a pastor for maybe 4 years at that point. And I came to him and I said, listen, my life is a mess. How in the world do you balance all these time demands? Surely you're a man of God. You've written a book on it. Tell me how to prioritize my life and balance my time demands according to those priorities. You know, he's an older man, walked with the Lord for several decades. He stretched back in his chair and said, Steve, let me tell you what life's really like. You know, I'm a little puppy then. Yeah. he said, the way that I view life and have learned to view life is that I see all my different priorities like balls, individual balls that I juggle. And he said, one ball is my wife, another one would be my children, another one would be my work, another one would be my quiet time, another one would be my physical health and condition. And I'm always juggling these balls. And that means that every once in a while I have one tight here or one tight here, and every once in a while, as I'm keeping close tabs on this, there goes my wife.
whoa! He's got to run. He's got to grab his wife and pull her back. He's going through life like that. I wish I could juggle. It'd make the illustration much better, wouldn't it? He goes, whoa! There goes my time, my quiet time with the Lord. I pull it back. And he said, and I said, really, G? That's you? That's me. That's you too? He said, yes, that's me. And the problem is, some people don't realize that that's truth. That's life. Balancing time demands. And the real problem is not that you're juggling, not that you're moving, not that things are moving out of focus and you're going for them. The problem is that sometimes you don't understand what those balls are. You may just have one. And another time is you may have too many. And the other time is you're letting some of them drop and you're not even juggling them at all. And that's where a lot of us are. Recently, I came across another concept by a man named Doug Sherman. You need to plug into this guy. He is speaking to men in the marketplace. Doug Sherman from Career Impact Ministries in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I'll give you that address after our time together if you want it. Doug Sherman said that we should see life as a pentathlon event. I love that illustration. You ever heard that one? That in Europe, the big event is not the decathlon, but the pentathlon. Five events. I don't remember them. They're like horseback riding, archery, shooting, running, and swimming, or something like that. And the idea is that the pentathlon athlete must train and excel in all five events if he's going to win. If he just excels in one, he loses the entire Olympic medal that he's seeking to attain. A man who has an ordered world doesn't just excel in one life, but it's the idea that you have a thought through understanding of what those five or more areas are. Your personal life, your church life, your family life, your community life, whatever it might be. You have a thought through understanding of what those are, and you are seeking to excel like a pentathlon athlete in all five of those areas. You don't just pick out running and only work on that. You see, that's where we fall short, and we may win one event, but we lose the big picture. So we don't just excel and succeed at planting a church. And we don't just give all our energies to that, because we'll lose our life, our children, our personal walk with God in the process if we're not very careful. That's what I mean by concomitant priorities, a dose of realism to the picture. Third dynamic, understanding the difference between goals and desires. Understanding the difference between goals and desires. This concept is used a lot by Dr. Larry Crabb, a Christian psychologist, in his counselor training. This would be one of the key dynamics that he has used in seeing people liberated from all types of life's problems. Understanding the difference between goals and desires. Again, I wish we had more time, but we don't. Goals are, point one, within your control, while desires are not. Let me see if I can clarify what I mean here. Under this definition, to have 100 people added to your church this year is not a goal, but it is a desire. Because you cannot absolutely control the outcome. You following me? What you should learn to say, or I would say at least to think, is that my desire is to have 100 people added to the church this next year. My goal is that which is in my control, to recruit and train an evangelism committee, to have 3 gathering events, to have a direct mail campaign, to reach so many thousand people. Things that are within your control to do. The idea is that you set goals for yourself that are always within your ability to control. I cannot emphasize that enough. And so you have to be careful as you set that. Of course, you know, we don't have the ability to control if we tell the future about anything. But within the context of what I'm saying here, I'm saying within what you would think would be reasonably within your control to order the outcome. The key to all this, point two, is that you must learn to work towards your goals and pray for your desires. Again, this can set you free from so much turmoil if you learn the simple truth of what it means to work hard towards your goals and to pray hard toward your desires. This does not mean that you don't establish faith-stretching goals, the way the word is commonly used. I'm all for that. What concerns me is what is really going on in your mind and in your heart when you do that. Call them goals if you like, but learn to see them as desires in light of this definition. Why is it so important, this distinction? For two reasons. One, because it's biblical. Again, this is Reformed. Although it requires you to work hard, it recognizes that the outcome, the final product of your ministry, is in the hands of God. And that does not negate the importance of personal responsibility and hard work. Second reason why this is so important, this distinction, is because, again, it's practical. What's biblical, what's Reformed, is always practical. One reason that many men drop out of the ministry is because they've never learned the importance of this simple distinction. Their desires are their goals, and when their desires are not met, they become angry. They become depressed. They become bitter. They become frustrated. Their marriages fail, and they drop out. And we're the worst at caring for our dropouts and for our wounded. But there is a freedom and a peace about your ministry that can be yours if you will learn how to understand the difference between goals and desires. If you'd like more clarification and application, I'd love to talk to you and how God has used this simple concept in my life to liberate me from a lot of stresses and problems that I've experienced. Another vital aspect of ordering your private world is knowing the importance of time management. Time management. The risk of sounding repetitious, this too could easily go for 1 to 6 hours. I want you to just simply be on your guard against the tyranny of the time trap. You know, it is so easy for a church planter to be overwhelmed with all the work that needs to be done. Many say they just don't have enough time each day to do all they need to do, and so they work 12 to 16 hours a day on just one ball. And they have ungodly priorities in the process. And the sad thing is that often, and I say this from personal experience, often such hours are seen as a mark of commitment and a badge of honor by all of those around you. The depth and the sagginess of the bags under your eyes are a mark of your spirituality. I've been there. And I tell you, I can't imagine Jesus Christ carrying out his ministry like I have had a tendency to carry out mine, with franticness and busyness and 16-hour-plus days. I just had this funny feeling that his ministry was also just as important as mine. Depth of insight. And yet I can't imagine him methodologically working out his ministry as I have a tendency to do, and maybe you too. The problem is that too often the church planter could get the same amount of work done. I have seen situations where I believe the same amount of work could be done in one half the time if they knew basic time management principles. I'm getting very, very practical here with you at this time. The value of time management. The truth is that most pastors have never been trained in time management principles or practices. I am deeply saddened by the practical theology departments of all the seminaries that I know and the lack of time management training that I see being conducted in those seminaries. You see, what's interesting is that, again, in the Dallas suburb where I am, it is unheard of for a man or a woman to be in the business world without having time management training. It is a basic, fundamental requirement. Administratively, their time is valuable. They are paid for their time. Therefore, their time must be managed. It must be understood. It must be prioritized. And so it is required by the businesses. And I think all the more the work of the church administratively. How much more important, or equally as important, should our work be
and yet we fail to understand the basic dynamics of time management. I can't cover time management principles here, but I would suggest a couple things. Let me give you my prejudices. I think every one of you ought to throw away any date book that you have, and I think you ought to buy a day timer if you don't have a day timer. I'll fight with you after. But I'm a day timer kind of guy. And the buses will wait while you make the decision. But the idea is, and I think you ought to have only one of two sizes. I don't think you should ever have any of these little weenie items like this. Okay? I mean it. If you've got this, I think you should toss it. You ought to have either the, I think you ought to write this down, the senior size wallet day timer or the junior desk size. If you're real spiritual, you'll get this one. But I tell you, and if you don't have a day timer, I will let you go with some other system, okay? But get my point here. You need to have the means by which to practically order your life. And I would strongly suggest this. I believe it's the best there is. And not only do you buy it, now all of a sudden you go home and you buy this thing and you say, bought it, unwrap it, my life's in order. No, it's not. You need to learn how to use it. For years I had a day timer, and I had no idea how to use it. I just kind of carried it around and was just as awful about my time management, but I had a slick little day timer. And let me give you a course that might offend you, but I don't care, because I believe it'll help you. It's by a guy named Charles Hobbs. Write that name down, Charles Hobbs. It's called Your Time and Your Life. Every businessman I know, almost in the Dallas area, has gone through this course. You can go through it. You can pay $800 and go to it in a weekend, or you can pay like $30 to $50 and get it all on tape. Charles Hobbs, Your Time and Your Life, Basic Time Management Principles. And be on your guard. The man is a secularist. You will hear everything from how to apply the principles of Zoroaster to your life. But you can take these principles that are set down there and you can integrate them quite easily to a biblical and a reformed world and life view. Why is this so important? Let me tell you why this is so important. It's not just a kick I have about time management. This is important because this is the way that you integrate godly priorities into your life. I'll tell you what, this is the bottom line of how you live your life. You're not having time with your wife and your children? If I were able to interview you, I am quite confident that you have not planned to have time with your wife and your children. If you have planned and you still aren't, you aren't planning properly. If you are not exercising like you should, if you are not reading and stimulating your mind like you should, if you are not taking a day off like you should, you're not planning properly. And I believe that you need to think through the importance of time management. A man with an ordered private world knows the vital importance of time management. Let's go quickly here. Next one, the dynamic of learning to enjoy the process and not just the product. Learning to enjoy the process and not just the product. To help you understand this, I want again, please don't get upset because I'm using secular sources. I believe all truth is God's truth with Arthur Holmes. How about this? A Jewish psychiatrist named Theodore Isaac Rubin, he capsulizes this particular dynamic, which could be one of the most important I'm sharing with you today. Learning to enjoy the process and not just the product more than any other. Listen to these words. I'm going to read it verbatim. Listen. Part of what destroys our appreciation of happiness and happiness itself is that we have become product-oriented rather than process-oriented. If you're doing something which you enjoy, which gives you satisfaction, the doing is more important than the accomplishment. For me, the process of writing a book is really exciting. When the book is finished, that's another kind of satisfaction. However, if the end result is my only satisfaction and the process is looked upon with disdain and contempt and is arduous, then I'm missing all the time and energy I put into writing that book waiting for the product. You following this? The result of the product is infinitesimal. The joy and the happiness from the process lasts much longer and is more involving and more satisfying over an extended period of time in your life. And grab this.
If you are totally goal-oriented in a success-oriented culture, and if the product is the goal, you have destroyed much of the possibility for happiness in your life. Since almost all of your life, hear this, almost all of your life has to be the process and not the product. If you can't live in peace with the process of living itself, there goes your happiness. If you get nothing out of the doing because you are looking for the high that will come at the end, you are in serious trouble. But if you have indeed been nourished by the whole process and it's given you great happiness, that result at the end of the road, positive or negative, isn't terribly significant. You just go on to the next process. I try to get my patients to appreciate what I call process living. Because the process is what life is all about. I'd say, this last sentence, I'd say we're in the process 98% of the time. If you're living just for that final 2%, my friend, you are in trouble. The truth is that most of the population is in trouble. Process living. Product living will rob you of joy in the ministry. If you always are living for some future product, whether it be an attendance goal, or to have that building, or to have that extra staff, it'll always be there. There's some product in front of you. I've got it in front of me all the time. If you're living for that, you will miss out on life. You will miss out on the whole process of life. And you are apt to live your whole life for something that is not yet there, just for those brief highs you get, and then you're back in the process, and basically you're a miserable person. And you disciple miserable people. Because you haven't learned the difference between process and product. Don't live for the 2%. The joy of process living is revolutionary. I am a driven man by nature, according to Gordon MacDonald's standards. I live for achieving goals. And I have just started to taste the joys of process living. I am not working any less hard. But Becky and I, my wife and I, have a slogan for this year, and that is, we want to live life. We're not backing off, but we want to live life. We want to experience the process. Oh, no, not till I get organized, I won't be happy. Not till I'm off support will I be happy. Not till I reach this number will I be happy. It's like, you're never happy. Because when you get there, there's another one. Thinking through the importance of this. Okay, quickly, let's go through the second section. What are the results of a person who has an ordered private world? I call them newfound freedoms. Newfound freedom. Those are the dynamics. That's all I felt I would have the time to address. There are several more, but those are the ones I wanted to highlight. What are the freedoms of an ordered private world? Let's quickly go through this. First of all, If you'll order your private world according to the dynamics that I have just outlined for you, Steve's guarantee is that you will experience the following. First of all, you will experience, I'm kidding, but I'm really not. See, the work is integrating these dynamics into your life. If you do that, these are the results. I experience them. To the degree that I apply the dynamics is the degree that I experience these freedoms. Be the same for you. First of all, you will experience a freedom from anxiety about church growth to an enjoyment of your work and leisure. A man with an ordered private world works hard and he plays hard and he enjoys both. If you don't enjoy your work, that ought to be a sign to you that you're violating some of these dynamics that I have just outlined. The church planting process can be very fulfilling if your private world is in order. I know what it's like to be a church planter on the field and just an arduous, painful, Love me. I'm a stage runner. Pray for me. And there's no experience of life. There's no experience of joy in the process of being a church planter. You can experience that freedom if you'll integrate these dynamics into your life. All right, just a word about leisure here. A vital part about staying fresh in your ministry is taking time for leisure. Don't violate the fourth commandment. I don't care whether you're a hardcore Sabbatarian or a softcore Sabbatarian. Don't violate the principle. God has given the Sabbath for you. The Sabbath has been given for man. This means that, I heard this once from Rick Warren, a man out in Southern California. He said, this is what you need to do. Keep this rule in your mind. Divert daily. It's the first thing. Learn to take little vacations in the midst of your day. Dale Carnegie likes that one too. Divert daily. Second, learn to withdraw weekly. And you know what I forgot the last one? Is something with A or yearly. I'll just say get away annually. I just winged that one. Get away annually. This means, people, you must take a day off. I am just grieved when I hear of church planters who do not take a 24-hour period off every 7 days. And if you're here, I hope you come under deep conviction. If you must take one day out of seven, I believe you are violating the fourth commandment. I believe it is sin to not take a day off a week and to rest and to refresh your soul spiritually. I believe it is sin. I believe it needs to be confessed, needs to be repented of. And that means that you need to buy an answering machine if you don't have one. Ask M&A to buy you one. I'm sure Paul would love to buy you one. The idea is revolution. Okay, and the idea here is turn on that answering machine so you can get any emergencies. But you are in Hawaii emotionally. You are out of touch. I tell you, I go that 24, on my Tuesday is sacred. I will fight you for that Tuesday. And if I'm not doing a funeral, I am gone. And I creatively am gone. I mean, we wear Groucho Marx masks when we come to the door. No. But it's the idea of you guard that day. And men, you are responsible before God to take the priority of integrating that into your life for your relationship with your wife and family. Another one is take your vacation. I was sickened and I was saddened as I have heard people say things like, church planters, first 2 years, set your vacations aside. I tell you what, I believe that's right out of the pit of hell. I believe that will destroy you. And you are, and M&A gives you 4 weeks of vacation. Take it. Take all four. Push it a little bit. You need it. 4 weeks are there. Most businessmen I know don't get 4 weeks right off the bat. You need it. There's a reason that it's there. Okay? Okay, freedom from frantic busyness and overwork to a balanced lifestyle. Freedom from frantic busyness and overwork to a balanced lifestyle is another result of integrating these dynamics into your life. A man with an ordered private world works hard, but he doesn't overwork. He knows that God causes the growth. 1 Corinthians 2. He will not sacrifice his health, his family, his personal walk with God for the ministry. Instead, he knows how to walk away from his desk in order to maintain biblical priorities. He sets limited goals, and he knows how to do it with all the time demands in his life. One of the hardest things for me personally is to walk away from my desk at my office. I tell you, when I'm facing deadlines and the secretary has a whole stack of messages on my desk that have to be returned, and I see that the preaching schedule is such, I've had a funeral this week and I'm thrown off and I've got to make this preaching deadline, and I look up and it's 5:30 and I've made a commitment to my kids to be with them before they're down at 8 o'clock. Let me tell you what I used to do. I used to call and say, honey, you know, I had a funeral this week. And, you know, it's just rough. The ministry's tough. Oh, you know, pray for me. And, you know, I'll be home late tonight. I might not even be able to eat dinner, honey. But for the cause of Christ, I'll move on tonight. Pray for me. And then hang up. And she'd hang up the phone, too. And she just fed it. Oh, what a man of God. What a man of God. He's just killing himself. He's getting sick for the kingdom. No, he's doing that. And I tell you what, that is not a man of God. That is not a man of faith. You want me to tell you what a man of faith is? A man of faith is looking right at the face of those six people that are going to be real upset with me because I don't call them back. A man of faith is saying, you know what, I don't care so much about the quality of my message this week. I care about my kids more than the quality of my message. I'll trust God with that message. I've been responsible. I haven't been slack. And I'm going home. And I'm walking away from my messages. And I'm walking away from all of my responsibilities. And I'm going home. And when I go home, I'm going home with the mindset of servanthood to lovingly move into their lives and care for them. I'm going home with them. I'm here to serve badge. Not the king is home, serve me. It's a whole different perspective. It's a balanced lifestyle. Next, freedom from comparing yourself to others to a sincere concern for their welfare. Freedom from comparing yourself to others to a sincere concern for their welfare. A man with an ordered private world knows true success in life is not measured by nickels and noses. It is not measured by attendance and finance charts. Such a man is able to rejoice in the growth of someone else's church. I want you to be honest with yourself. You don't have to be honest with me right now. But a good test, hear this, a good test of how well your private world is ordered is how you respond to Mr. Attendance Reporter. Look at him. I love this cartoon. He's here at Ferrum. He's here. You've already talked to him. He's kind of proud about what the old chart's been doing over the last year. He kind of, you know, you're talking about fishing and frogs, and he works it right down to attendance reports. You know, he can take anything you talk about. Watch him. Watch for Mr. Attendance. He'll take almost anything and work it around to, yeah, we're doing pretty good. You just happen to have my little chart right here. How are you doing? You see? I tell you, you know what another good test is? Another good test is what happens when they're doing poorly. What happens when you hear that they're not out of that plateau? What happens when you hear that they're declining? Does your heart kind of rejoice? You kind of glad? I don't like that word competition. I don't like it at all. Your competition is this church, this person. I don't like that. I don't like that word. And I think it will, how you feel at those times, the success or failure of other people, ought to be a good indicator, ought to be a light go off to talk to you about your private world, your values, your view of success. D, next page. Another freedom you'll experience as you integrate these dynamics into your life is a freedom from anxiety about being perfect to accepting yourself the way you are. An hour or two could go into this one, but let me just summarize it by saying such a person's worth is not tied to what he does or what he produces, but who he is in Jesus Christ. Oh, I long for myself and for others to come to grips with the revolutionary freedom that is available to workaholic church planter types whose identities are tied to the product, to be set free to serve just as fervently, but their identity is not linked to their ministry. Their identity is linked to their position in Jesus Christ. Finally, freedom from seeing the ministry as merely working at programs to seeing it as loving people. To seeing it as loving people. So many times church planters say, and I am guilty of this by my very nature and temperament, you know, I love the ministry. I just hate people. You know, I got my goals, I've got my objectives, I've got my plan, I've got my vision, and you know, people get in the way all the time. They just get in the way all the time of what I'm seeking to do for God and for His kingdom. Some of you here today knew Mark Pett. Did some of you know Mark? Dynamic church planter. A man that I had deep respect for. The old Delmarva Presbytery, he started several churches. He got cancer several years ago. He died not too long ago. Before his death, he told a group of people what he'd do if he had it to do over again. He was a man to me that I aspire to follow. He was a model to me personally.
And he began to reflect and think, what did he do differently now that he was approaching death in light of his ministry? He said he'd work just as hard at church planting, that he'd still be committed to the things he was committed to. But the one thing that he would do differently is that he would love people more in the process. That he would resist the temptation of just seeing people as the means to the end of his plans. And that he would actively give himself in Christ-like love to all of those people, even the little people around him, to seek to impact their lives for Jesus Christ. A man with an ordered private world is a man who loves God and a man who loves other men and women. That's the greatest commandment. And the greatest commandment is a manifestation of one whose private life is in order. Let me give you a couple books in closing here that I think you ought to read in light of some of this. You probably got in the mail Liberating Ministry from the Success Syndrome by Kent Hughes, published by Tyndall. If not, you ought to get that. Liberating Ministry from the Success Syndrome. Of course, Ordering Your Private World by Gordon MacDonald. Even though a man falls, it doesn't mean he can't speak truth, and that truth can't be applied to our lives. Another book you probably have never seen, published by a pastor in, I think, Tulsa, called Rhythms of Life. Rhythms of Life. I don't know his name. Write it down. If you really needed to have it, you could find it. Rhythms of Life addresses the same issue. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for this time. Use the words that were said, the concepts that were shared, to cause us to be men and women of God and to order our private worlds. For we ask this in the name of Christ, and so that his kingdom might be advanced in and through our lives in the brief time you have allotted to us. Amen.